Council come to order. Good morning, colleagues. Your flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Bill Garrard. We'd ask you to please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. This morning, colleagues, our opening ceremony will be led by our very own Representative Andy Olson, District 15, Albany, Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Morning, everyone. All right. I have my quote book that I save special quotes. I just wanted to share two with you and then close in prayer with you. But my first quote comes from Albert Einstein. And he says, there are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. And then this one that I share with you is a little longer. It's actually very interesting that it was written a long time ago. The will of God prevails. In great contests, each party claims to act in accordance with the will of God. Both may be, and one must be, wrong. God cannot be for and against the same thing at the same time. In the present civil war, it is quite possible that God's purpose is something different from the purpose of either party, and yet the human instrumentalities working just as they do are the best adaptation to effect his purpose. That was September 2nd, 1862, by Abraham Lincoln. So let's pray. Father, we thank you for this day, and we thank you too, Lord, for the family that you have given us, all of us. We thank you too for the leadership that you have given to us in this country as well as in the state, and we ask that you would grant your mercies upon us as well as your wisdom, and also, God, that you would grant just insight into things as well for us, that we would work together, we pray now. Thanks, in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you very much, Representative. Courtesies. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Speaker. It is my pleasure to introduce some folks and some friends up in the back gallery here. These are folks from our homeschool network, the Home Education Freedom Network, I call them. And Mr. Speaker, we've got folks from Salem, Dallas, Silverton, Hillsborough, and Molalla. And I hope that we can extend courtesies to them. There's a lot of things this group does, Mr. Speaker, but I have to admit the first thing that comes to my mind is Apple Pie Day. This is not, sadly, Apple Pie Day. But March, I know I had the same reaction. March 25th through 31st is Home Education Week this year, as proclaimed by the governor. They obviously can't be here with us then because we won't be in session, so some of them came today. Please give them all of our courtesies and welcome them.
Thank you very much, Representative, and welcome to your guests. Thanks for joining with us today. Further courtesies, Representative Kinnamer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask the courtesies of the House be extended to three of special guests that are visiting with me today. Sebastian Hill is in seventh grade, right over here, and Emily Swackhammer is in fifth grade, and Sebastian's mother, Emily Furr, I got it right, is here as well. Please, welcome.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Glad to have you all with us. Always fun to have guests. Further courtesies, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming some very special guests that are in the back. This is a delegation of students from South Africa. They have come all the way to stay in Benton County for the next 2 weeks. They are part of an Oregon 4-H program on youth leadership, and these are some of your future elected leaders of South Africa. Thank you so much for coming. Welcome to the Oregon House, and we look forward to seeing what you all do with your lives.
Welcome. Thanks for the journey you have made to join with us here, and we hope you enjoy your stay in Oregon. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I ask you to extend courtesies to my intern for this session, Tom Wirth. Tom is a student at Portland State University, but before he crossed the river, he was my student at Portland Community College Cascade, very active in student government, interested in everything political, and he's currently working on a project relating to costs of higher education. His parents are here as well. Tom grew up in Hood River, and his parents are here somewhere. There they are, over there on the North Gallery. That's his mom, Valerie Wirth, his stepdad, Dave Princehouse, and his grandpa, Robert Wirth. Welcome, all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome to your guests. Thank you for being with us. Wonderful to have you here as well. Further courtesies? Verification of a quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Colby is here. Representative Nolan. Representative Nolan. Representative Jensen. Representative Jensen is present. Nolan is excused for business of the House. Representatives Cowan, Lindsay, and Greg Smith excused. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate to pass Senate Bills 1512, 1546, 1518, 1548, 1555, 1532, adopted SJM 201.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJM 201, urging President and Congress of the United States of America to allow countries to manage revested Oregon and California Railroad grant lands located in counties.
Measure read first time has passed the co-speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First readings and House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 4021 related to humane special agents and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4057 related to higher education employers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 472 related to seasonal fire personnel and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4089 related to annexation of non-contiguous territory and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4090 related to urban services and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4141 related to workforce development legislation advisory committee and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4158 related to wolves and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed a third reading. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4041 related to taxation of Indian tribe property and prescribing an effective date.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4041. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4041 comes to you from the Committee on Revenue. It recognizes that Oregon's tribal governments provide critical public services to reservation communities, such as water, sewer, as well as fire and police protection. Reservation lands are often held in trust by the federal government, and property taxes are not assessed on those lands. However, property purchased by tribes held in fee simple status is subject to local property taxes. This bill provides a tax exemption only to property used exclusively for government services. This legislation provides consistency and efficiency in state tax policy by taxing tribes for providing public services that are located on fee land. Tribal governments are often in the best position to provide essential public services in rural parts of the state where it is challenging to deliver government services. Thanks to the exhaustive work of the good representatives from Ontario and from Central Oregon, this bill acknowledges that our valued government-to-government relationships are important and will help improve our communities. I also want to thank those representatives I just mentioned for their work on identifying a particular issue within this bill that we are going to address on the Senate side, and I believe that you will hear from one or both of them on that particular issue. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill reflects a great deal of work, and I'm going to say narrowing down to those types of governmental services that can be quantified. I think the bill is a dramatic advancement over what it was 9 months ago when it was presented first. There is a choice here, and when we give out a tax exemption, it's important that we have a good reason for doing so. There's an excellent reason in this. There's a number of excellent reasons for doing so here. The first is that the tribes have an alternative, and it was mentioned in the previous remarks, and that is that they could put this privately held land into trust. And that would mean that all of the land that they own would go into trust. And that would mean the activities on that land would not be taxable. This bill limits the amount of that land to the portion that is used for government services. Thus, the rest of the land that they might acquire, and they will acquire more land as their economic situation improves, which thank goodness it is, will remain a part of the county tax base if we allow them this refined tool to enjoy the tax exemption for governmental services. We spent a great deal of time working on that definition. I'm happy with it. There are a couple of clarifications that I think will be addressed by a following speaker, but the bill is something that I believe advances the interest of Oregon because I think it helps bring our governments of the 9 federally recognized tribes closer to the government of Oregon. I recommend your support.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. In committee, colleagues, I voted no, and I will be voting yes today on the floor, and I just want to explain my no vote. First off, as you know, when we passed this in committee last week, things were still coming fast and furious, and I felt unprepared to vote yes at that time. I did have some concerns, some that I still have, but I do believe this is a good bill. The one concern I have, and I ask for sensitivity for us, and I know most of us are mindful of it, and that is that the current fiscal impact to our counties and to the regions that are impacted by current inventory is at $100 million. My one concern that I have is that this will increase the impact to our local communities, and these are communities in rural Oregon. And my county has the pleasure of underwriting some of the services in the rest of Oregon. Again, you've heard me before say, happy to do so. These are Oregonians that we're supporting. But until we get more self-sustainability in finances for those rural counties, these issues will continue. We need jobs out there. And my concern is that our future inventory of land that may come on the rolls for exemption under this bill may further harm the financing of rural Oregon. We need to get jobs there. I will be voting yes on this, and I just want to explain my no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does?
Thank you, and I apologize for not getting this to you ahead of time, but I know this will be an easy one. So currently there is a process in place for tribal land trust application to the federal government that really has a minimum requirement of check back with local governments. I mean, they ask them to submit a letter. There's really very little influence that letter has. In this process, I believe there is an obligation to have the tribal government work with the local entities in establishing a path forward. Could you explain a little bit of how that will work?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Representative, for that question. You're exactly right that any tribe seeking a property tax exemption must file with the county assessor, and then that determination may be appealed, and that this is part of that local governance process and really keeps the counties in the loop.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have spent a previous life in public service as a local city council person and council president, and have extensive experience working with tribal land trust situations with the tribe from the community in which I live. And I will tell you, the ability for tribes to work with local government entities to resolve these issues at a local level is extremely important. And this bill allows that, and for that reason, I am urging an aye vote. It will be a much better way to go about things than through the federal government. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict.
State your potential conflict.
It's my understanding that one or more attorneys from my law firm may have from time to time or in the future represented one or more tribes on matters that may or may not be related to this bill. And so out of an abundance of caution, I thought I should declare a potential conflict.
So noted.
To the bill?
To the bill.
So I want to start by thanking the representatives from far eastern Oregon and Bridgetown. Yesterday, when the bill came to the floor originally, I had a concern that came up at the last minute. It was actually caught by my brilliant legislative aide, Jordan Conger. And I will take all credit for having caught it, though. The issue was, at its most basic level, had to do with a technical concern in the bill that might have made it possible for a opportunistic private party to sort of hijack the process and benefit from the property tax exemption instead of the tribe benefiting and the potential tenants of low-income housing, which are part of the plan of the bill is to create low-income housing. So I told the representatives from far eastern Oregon and Bridgetown of the concern. They very prudently and I think generously pulled the bill back, held it over, and we worked on it last night. I just briefly want to touch on the additional protections that we are going to try to add in the Senate side. My understanding is we have a commitment to do that. Number one, actually in the bill already, there's a protection that says that properties that can be part of this program can only be in counties where 10% of the tribal members reside. And so there's a geographic limitation that already existed in the bill. We are adding reporting to the counties in the amendments. We're going to add that report that would be given to the county assessors will also be shared with the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. And finally, in my mind, most importantly, there will be a sunset added to the bill so that new applications, not existing applications or projects that have already been approved, would be sunsetted in 5 years. So there will be a need to come back to the legislature to reauthorize, which will give us the opportunity to look at the program and see if it's working as intended or if indeed it was possible to hijack it. So with the understanding that those amendments will be added in the Senate, I will be voting yes and encourage your aye vote as well.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Only again to say that I appreciate all of the work of all the parties that have come together to make this a good bill, and especially the work of the representative from Far Eastern Oregon and from Beautiful Bend. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4041, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, I want to take a moment and return to the order of courtesies. We have been joined by a group of students in the back gallery whom I hope are from Nestucca Valley High. Is that you? All right. Wonderful. Good morning. Thanks for joining with us this morning. They are guests of Representative Debbie Boone this morning. Thank you for being here. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4016 relating to harm to a child.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4016. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4016 comes to you with a unanimous vote from the House Education Committee. What this bill does is really very simple. It expands the list of individuals who are required to report to law enforcement or DHS when they suspect that a child is being abused or that an adult is abusing a child, to include employees of our higher education institutions, both public and private, to include those who provide athletic services and are paid to do so for young people, and also the employees of youth-serving organizations such as the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, 4-H, et cetera. The bill also clarifies that for any mandatory reporter, the responsibility for that reporting lies with the individual rather than the organization, and that an individual must report regardless of whatever the internal policies of an organization are. Colleagues, this is a good bill. It's a simple bill that will keep our kids safer, and I want to offer my special thanks to the representatives from District 59 and the representative from Beautiful Bend for working so hard to get this to be a bill we could all support. And an extra special note of thanks to my co-chair, the good representative from Wilsonville and Sherwood, for giving the time needed to get this right and have a great product out of our education committee. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. I just want to make this painfully clear. I heard on a television news report this morning out of Portland that the bill includes volunteers. The original bill did, but we redrafted the bill, amended it, and it does not include volunteers. Is that correct?
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Speaker, this bill, as amended, does not include a single volunteer. However, as you pointed out in committee, a volunteer is not precluded from reporting, and hopefully all of us will report if we fear that a child is in danger, whether we are required to or not. But the bill does not put a mandate on any volunteer.
Thank you, Representative.
Further question? Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, would you like to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson, excused business of the House. House Bill 4016, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 4027 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Friday, February 17th, 2012 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4063, relating to professional licensure of applicants with military training or experience and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4063.
Jesus.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Pardon my hoarse voice here, that whatever's going around the building has finally found its way to my office. Colleagues, it's my honor to bring you House Bill 4063, which passed as a committee bill unanimously from your Committee on Veterans Affairs. House Bill 4063 is designed to recognize the skill sets that veterans of the armed forces of the United States have garnered through their experience serving our country. House Bill 4063 requires that certain professional licensing boards evaluate and accept the education and, in some cases, the hours served in professional fields during a veteran's military tenure. The professions recognized for reciprocity come from a variety of occupational fields and include private security professionals, teachers, engineers, land surveyors, psychologists, occupational therapists, occupational therapy assistants, physician's assistants, nursing assistants, denturists, chiropractors, physical therapists, medical imaging technicians, hemodialysis technicians, athletic trainers, respiratory therapists, polysomnographic technologists, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, any field of practice under the Board of Cosmetology, funeral service practitioners, embalmers, polygraph examiners, private investigators, and truck drivers. House Bill 4063 is a jobs bill for veterans who have honorably served our country. Currently, the unemployment rate for post-9/11 veterans is nearly 14%, with the 18 to 24-year-old cohort of these veterans unemployed at nearly 22%. When the 41st Enhanced Infantry Brigade from Oregon came home from a year-long tour in Iraq in 2010, nearly half of the 3,400 soldiers were jobless. This cohort still suffers incredibly high unemployment. House Bill 4063 is not blazing new trails. Last year, four states that include Washington, Utah, Colorado, and West Virginia enacted new laws to help recognize the transferability of skills attained through military service and provide reciprocity in the civilian world. In 2012, there are 24 bills in 14 other states like this one. House Bill 4063 is designed so that the transferability of a veteran's skills are recognized in the civilian world after separation from the military. Many times, soldiers have difficulty explaining their training and skills in civilian speak because the methodology of military training doesn't always line up perfectly with a liberal arts program at a four-year university or a trade school program in a community college. By clearing the path for veterans to come straight from the service and be hired in a field in which the U.S. military spent time and federal tax dollars training these servicemen and women, we close the unemployment gap for veterans. Further, by supporting this bill, the legislature is helping the middle-class families represented by the veteran population. By saving veterans the time and money associated with retraining for a profession in which they already trained, the resource of tuition money, either paid for out of pocket or through a GI Bill, is preserved. In fact, for soldiers who have earned a post-9/11 GI Bill, that benefit is transferable to a child or a spouse, putting a college education in the reach of a family who might not otherwise be able to send their child to a university. I urge an aye vote on House Bill 4063. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill is a great bill. This is something we can do for our veterans. Unfortunately, the representative from West Lynn gave my speech for me, so I won't repeat it. But she worked very hard. I appreciate her hard work. And this is something we can all do in all of our districts to help get our overly unemployed veterans back to work as soon as possible. Please vote yes.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I would like to also encourage a vote of yes on the bill, but I hope that when it goes to the Senate side, there are going to be some amendments that will clear up some of the problems with this. And because I don't think that there should be a delineation between, especially in the teacher end of it, the armed forces training versus what people have done in the Peace Corps, and there was appeared to be a delineation between the two, because Oregon has some of the highest teacher standards in the nation. We want to make sure that those are kept. But when it comes to jobs, you're looking at somebody who personally walked into 150 businesses in Tigard when the 41st came back and gave them flyers from the Department of Employment about who to go to hire vets. And so hopefully I got a couple of people hired. But I support the bill, but I certainly hope that there are going to be some tweaking to it, because education is very important, and with some of the teaching skills that are learned in the military, they wouldn't even be able to teach with their own children in DOD schools, Department of Defense. So we want to make sure that that's cleared up for our own children here in Oregon. But it is a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the representative from 12th and West Lynn, it's an honor serving with you in the Veterans Committee. The question, any amendments added to the bill in committee? We added provisions allowing licensing boards to determine whether or not veteran applicants have military training or experience that is substantially equivalent to the education required to cover the requirements set forth by various boards and commissions for the number of professions. The language in varying forms was added to over 20 different sections of the bill during our committee process. I did, however, notice, as we've talked, that the language is missing from the Section 1A portion of the bill dealing with licensure of teachers. Was this intentionally left out of the bill? And if not, what are your thoughts about supporting a change fixing this omission in the Senate?
Thank you. So a couple quick answers on that. One, it was not an intentional omission. And in fact, I appreciate the fact that the representative from Gresham has already submitted an amendment to solve that in the Senate side. And we'll be working diligently to fix that on its way through the process. And then the question, there was a piece about whether or not this somehow fractured Peace Corps for military, and that also was not the intent as well. So and TSPC has actually looked at that apparently and said that they don't see that now as being somehow separating Peace Corps from military and the standards for Peace Corps somehow changing. So,
thank you, Representative. Further question?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you. So during our hearings, and we had multiple hearings on this bill, you had quite a bit of information on the Troops to Teacher program. I'm going to ask if you could please share that with the body. I think they would all benefit from hearing about this program, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share that. So the federal government has a program called Troops to Teachers. It's been around since about the mid-90s. Since its inception, over 56,000 veterans have registered for this program. That doesn't mean they've all accepted dollars, but this was 56,000 registered. Of that, only 440 from Oregon have registered. Today, you have a floor letter on your desk about the Troops to Teachers program. But interestingly, I want to share a few things. The Troops to Teachers program is designed to give federal dollars, entitlement dollars, to a soldier who otherwise would qualify to be on a path to being a teacher. So they have a bachelor's degree and they're really ready to come and transition from the service into the civilian world of teaching our children. And the program has given out $81 million since its inception. Oregon's drawdown of Troops to Teacher dollars since the program's inception has only been $400,000. Less than 0.5%. When a soldier from Oregon calls to the Troops to Teacher office in Colorado Springs and inquires about the program, they are actually told to move to Florida to get the licensure there because Florida recognizes the skill set of servicemen and women coming out of the military. So they're advised to go to Florida to get the licensures there so that they don't have to start the basic teacher licensure program all over again. And then they're told to go to a state that has reciprocity. So when you think about the fact that Oregon continues to be a donor state with our federal tax dollars, Troops to Teachers is a great way to actually draw down federal dollars back into our Oregon schools, allow a soldier to use those dollars for an additional licensure, whether it's an elementary school endorsement or a math or reading endorsement. That's a potential available in the Troops to Teachers program. The other interesting thing is for the families that are post 9/11 and they have the GI Bill, if the soldier is able to draw down the Troops to Teacher dollars instead, which is up to $10,000, that's a big chunk of change towards additional higher ed. That means that the 9/11 GI Bill, post-9/11 GI Bill, is preserved for the family, which through federal law is transferable to a spouse or a dependent. Again, when you're thinking about somebody who is an E6 coming out of the military, who is truly in that middle-class family designation, the ability to transfer those dollars to their child and leverage them for a higher education is significant. So the fact that Oregon has not been successful at drawing down the Troops to Teachers benefit is significant, and it is problematic in my mind. General Caldwell also testified during our committee that there are some state Troops to Teacher dollars, and less than a dozen soldiers have ever drawn that money in Oregon. Again, the licensure requirement being kind of an onerous process for somebody who already has those skill sets. So thank you for asking about the Troops to Teachers program. I appreciate that.
Further question?
To the bill, Mr.
Speaker. To the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, and thanks again for your hard work. I really appreciate all that you're doing for veterans and what you do in this building. I want to point out just a couple quick things. We had a lot of testimony over the time, but I want to say in 4 years I've been in the building now, or going into the fourth year, this is something that we have talked about for quite some time. How do we do this? I want to let you know, too, that take comfort in knowing that we're already doing this in some cases. The case of Department of Public Safety and Training, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. They testified and said that in many cases, case-by-case analysis of equivalent experience required by the bill is consistent with their current practice. However, they did notice that they can't do that in the world of polygraphs. So you could be a military polygrapher, but have to take all the certifications, again, even though it should transfer. This bill allows them to do that, and they were thankful for that opportunity. Bottom line is, if you look at the bill and you read the bill, if any of it's causing anybody any angst, which again, keep in mind, I've already had the amendment drafted to the Senate. I think we'll see this bill on concurrence, and I hope we can support it again. But I hope we support it today for the following reason. It states in there in several different parts of the bill, you'll read, it has military training or experience that the board determines is substantially equivalent to the training required by subparagraph as it goes on specifically. That is experience of board determined substantially equivalent. One of the problems with the military soldiers is they come out of the military, and here's the problem. The problem is us. We don't know how to receive them. We don't know how to take our military soldiers, their efforts, their experience, their years of dedication, and transfer that into the civilian world. Trust me, when I leave this position, whenever it is, or people determine it's time for me to go, I'll be able to tell everybody I served in the state, you know, Oregon State House of Representatives. I can explain that I work with legislative council. I can explain the work we did here, and some people will say, wow, amazing. That's great. But for somebody to say, I taught the military instructors course for OCS, what does that mean to anybody in here? Some of you might know that's a pretty big deal, Officer Candidate School, training the people in leadership that are training the folks that are going to serve this country. That's a pretty big deal. But in our world, huh, don't know. And that's the problem. This is one more step. It's not a huge ask, but it is a big step towards the right direction of looking at what soldiers are doing, what they're learning and experience, what they're bringing out of that military institution and applying in the field. And quite honestly, I appreciate, and I'm not here to water anything down. I can understand the concern, but I can tell you that in the field of EMT, as an example, you might remember in 2009, we looked at a bill. Oregon was the only state for 12 or 14 years that had required a two-year degree to be a paramedic. And our ask was, let's let them transfer reciprocity, challenge the test if they're an out-of-state medic. We did that because, as I was told by some of Oregon's paramedics, but we're the leader. You're not a leader if nobody's following you. I would ask that we follow the good representative today and we pass this bill, House Bill 4063. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
And I really appreciate the efforts, Representative, and the amendment is going to satisfy the concerns I had. I was concerned about the certification problem where some of these people wouldn't meet the requirements to teach in the military schools for their children, for the military children. And General Caldwell said that you can become certified with as little as 10 hours, and of course that isn't what we're looking for. And I really appreciate the efforts. I will be supporting the bill, knowing that the amendments will be taken care of in the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues.
To the bill.
First of all, let me say I love this bill. I'm going to be voting no on it today, but I look forward to voting yes on it when it comes back with the changes. For the reasons that the good representative from Gresham said, this is a bill that once it's fixed is going to be very, very important for us to support. I know personally many of my students have been returning veterans who have come to college to get training. And there is nothing that is more frustrating for them than to have to take courses on subjects that they're already proficient in. And for many of them, they're facing a number of challenges in re-entering life back home to begin with. And then the frustration of having to take courses that they really don't need, that is a real problem. You're going to be seeing some legislation. I hope it's scheduled to be worked in Ways and Means Education Subcommittee next week that came out of the Higher Ed Committee. The good representative from Hood River and I submitted it as a committee bill that try to do things along this same line, giving veterans credit for prior learning that can be objectively assessed. And I really look forward to being able to present that bill to you. for now, you know, this bill still does have that problem of we can't certify it in the bill as stated that instructors are fully equivalent to what would be the case here for teachers in Oregon. Once that little flaw is removed, again, I'll be very eager to support it.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Parrish, would you like to close?
Yes, thank you.
She does.
Colleagues, your House Committee on Veterans Affairs worked very hard on this bill. We understand that there is a tweak for some language around the teacher licensure provision that needs to be made in order to bring the language consistent with the rest of the bill, and the representative from Gresham has already submitted that amendment for the Senate Veterans Committee to consider. The issue around teacher licensure may make a few people uncomfortable, but there is nothing comfortable about a soldier's life. It comes with physical, psychological, and financial hardship. This bill honors their service. The Veterans Affairs Committee is the one committee I serve on that is not filled chair to chair with interest groups. In fact, it's quite empty. The people doing the work for veterans in Oregon are a quiet few, many of whom are not paid for their efforts. The veterans of Oregon have served our state and country with honor, pride, and dedication. They do not come to the legislature with their hat in hand, making significant financial requests. In a time of budget austerity, this is a bill that is free. It has no fiscal impact. And yet the positive fiscal impact to the veteran and their family will be untold. We can't put a price tag on the value we can return to them for all they've done for us. Our committee recognizes that we, in the legislature, are the voice of Oregon veterans, and we will continue to bring bills forward like this that ensure our veterans are taken care of properly. Again, I urge your aye vote, and we will work hard to make any necessary changes on the Senate side. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes aye. House Bill 4063, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk would please read the next bill.
House Bill 4108, relating to precious material secondhand dealing.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4108. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. It's way too easy for a criminal to steal your jewelry or your silverware and go sell it quickly, maybe in as little as an hour or two, for cash. No questions asked, no records. Those criminals steer clear of pawn shops, of course, because pawn shops are heavily regulated. They're going to ask for their ID, make a record of it, and make a record of the item. No, they just go somewhere else that's not regulated. Several Oregon communities have adopted their local ordinances to try to clamp down on this. But the criminals know which ones those are, and they just drive a few extra miles up the road and sell it somewhere else. And then there are those traveling trade shows that come through town. Maybe you've seen the big newspaper ads advertising, come on down to the fairgrounds or the hotel and sell your stuff quick, no questions asked. Individuals aren't the only victims in this scene. Businesses are victims too when they can inadvertently purchase stolen material. Talking with law enforcement and business owners, it's clear that there are holes in the regulations and we need to plug those holes. There are a few Oregon communities already trying to rein in the problem with their own local ordinances, 4 counties and 7 cities, but that leaves the rest of the state uncovered. 16 other states have already established a statewide statute regarding record keeping, working with law enforcement, and similar requirements. Alabama, Arkansas, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, Virginia, and Washington. This bill simply establishes for us, for the state of Oregon, a statewide baseline for keeping records of the secondhand jewelry and precious metal sales while keeping local control for those communities that already have it intact. This has been the product of discussions with law enforcement and business coming up with an idea about what's reasonable and doable, but would make a big difference. The objectives of this bill are simply to reduce property crime associated with the theft of gold and precious jewelry and precious metals, and to provide a way for law enforcement and victims to identify and recover stolen goods. The bill requires a state standard baseline for recording transactions, recording the seller and the item, establishes a holding period, and allows for law enforcement to inspect the item or the record. It lists exemptions such as gold ore and dental gold. The value of gold and silver has increased dramatically. Stores for secondhand purchases are cropping up still, and you've seen that these traveling trade shows are coming through town more and more often. Local ordinances have been adopted, and those have proven to be successful for those local communities, and businesses have adapted. Not regulating all the brick-and-mortar establishments in Oregon and those transient sales is turning out to be unfair, and not only unfair to business, but it's also creating a terrible problem for law enforcement, and people continue to be victimized. So I'm asking for your aye vote on this bill today.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker and members, I want to thank the good representative from Central and North Eugene for bringing this bill to us. We had some interesting testimony about this bill, and I thought I'd mention a couple of these. One is that the fact is that many of the people who go through this process get ripped off tremendously. They get a very small percentage of the value of the items they're trading in. And I think this is important. The second is that we have a tremendous lot of fencing going on. It's a great way to get rid of stolen property. And basically, there are no records kept. And we even had some testimony that, for example, before there's an event in Roseburg, which is less regulated than in Eugene, the actual thefts are going up dramatically in Eugene. In anticipation of moving down to Roseburg and sell them in a day or two. And to give you some ideas about this, we also talked about those ads you've seen, some of them like a full-page ad in the Oregonian. Well, there was one company recently, they had two pages. Each page cost $10,000 a day, so that's $20 a day, and they ran their ad for 4 days. Do the math. They must be making a tremendous profit. I think we need to help bring them in a little bit. I like this. It helps create a uniform way of dealing with them throughout the state. Good bill should pass.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I punched in a little late on that one. At one time in my former...
To the bill?
To the bill.
To the
at
bill.
One time in my former life, I was a sergeant in charge of the pawn shop detail with the Portland Police. And so these kind of things came up, and we would watch those ads show up, and they would be just outside of Portland. And if you read the ones in Oregonian, they're just outside of Portland. So people can come in, dump off your mother's gold diamond ring that she's had for years that suddenly was been stolen from your house, and you have virtually no chance of recovering it. With record keeping, as they had in Portland, we recovered a lot of stolen stuff. The pawn shops cooperated with the police. They would help you get it back. And the only other thing I'd say is to everybody is, if you have some of these old valuable things, it would be good to photograph them, because if you say, I lost a diamond ring, that's pretty hard to identify in the massive amount of this kind of stuff that's being exchanged. But this bill is a great bill and will really help people recover their stolen property, and I think it's a vital bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr.
She
Speaker.
Does.
Very quickly, Eugene Police Detective Chris Bream tells us, if there's just one thing you do, make sure you pass that bill. Right now, we have people stealing jewelry in Lane County and going right down to Roseburg in Douglas County because they have different laws and we can't track it. And from the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, President Larry Blanton and Deschutes County Sheriff tells us, we support House Bill 4108 because it gives law enforcement a new tool for our toolbox for fighting property crimes, especially those related to Oregon's meth epidemic. So please, let's let Oregon join all those other states that are already doing this. Let's pass this bill and try to clamp down on this flood of stolen jewelry and silver. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem. Clem is an aye. Representative Garrett. Garrett is aye. House Bill 4108, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, would please read the next bill.
House Bill 4110, relating to investment in companies doing business in Iran and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4110. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's been a long time coming for this bill and a year of work to get it to the floor here today. And first and foremost, I want to thank both the representative from House District 33 and the representative from West Eugene and Junction City for their continued belief that this bill could come to fruition in this short legislative session. I also want to thank the members of the House Committee on Revenue for their continued patience with this bill. I want to be sure to thank all who signed on this bill both last session and in this short session. And this one special thank you to the State Treasurer and his office for their continued support to find a viable legislative solution. And a thank you to the five federal delegates whose letters of support are on your desk today that we had received last legislative session. There has been a lot of work and countless hours negotiated by a variety of organizations alongside legislators from both sides of the aisle, working together to accomplish this bill, simply because this bill is the right thing to do. Oregon's forward-thinking tradition and humanitarian perspective have been displayed in previous divestitures of public funds from both apartheid in South Africa and in Sudan. Today, we will begin that tradition anew by setting the groundwork for Oregon to divest from the energy sector of Iran. Some say that this is merely a display and that we are actually accomplishing little more than sending a message about the Iranian situation. If that was all this bill accomplishes, I would still be adamantly supportive of this concept. But I actually feel that however small our contribution may be to applying peaceful pressure, it matters. According to Dennis Ross, who worked as President Obama's senior Middle East advisor, he said that sanctions are working. The Republic of Iran's currency has devalued by half within the last 6 weeks. Europe has boycotted their oil, and China, who has not participated in boycotts, refuses to pay higher than 50% of the previous price of Iran's, forcing Iran to, in their isolated situation, forcing the value of their oil down. Don't think for a second that Iran's recent change of heart to meet with the UN Security Council of five permanent members with an extended invite to meet with Germany wasn't due to crippling and deteriorating economic situation inside of Iran. Using our small influence alongside with 21 other states to help apply pressure to the general portfolio managers does in fact help the overall effort to find another solution other than armed confrontation to stop their belligerent rhetoric from becoming the promise fulfilled. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on this bill today, and I thank every one of you who have supported this bill in moving it along in the process, and I send a special appreciation to my co-carrier and chief sponsor in allowing me to chief sponsor with him on this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Co-carrier Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I just want to add a point that the carrier has made. I received some email from folks who think this is a warlike measure. I want to state for the record, I've opposed every war we've been in since World War II. I think this is a peaceful measure. I think it's an attempt to pressure Iran into reversing their policy of rapid movement toward nuclear armaments. I think the extent to which they achieve that, it completely destabilizes the Middle East, will clearly lead to an attack by one of the other powers in the Middle East against Iran. This is a very specific target. It deals only with companies that the U.S. government has identified and put on a scrutinized list for investing directly in Iran's energy sector. It does not aim at the people of Iran in other ways. It doesn't stop food or medical supplies or any other business activity of the state. It simply is aimed at the energy sector, which Iran uses as the front for the development of nuclear weapons. I urge you to join me in voting for this peaceful statement that our state does not support the development of nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Or one of the carriers. I do.
He does.
Thank you. Representative, I apologize for not getting this question to you in advance, but it mirrors a question that was in the committee, so I believe that you'll be able to answer. It is my belief that states should not lead on foreign policy, that that is the province of the federal government. Does this bill follow and track with a congressional bill or resolution?
Yes, this bill does. So Iran, there are a list of countries that are sanctioned countries, and Iran is on that list.
Thank you.
Further question? Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Widener, would you like to close?
Yes, I would. Colleagues, I have passionately pursued this moment alongside many of you because the Iranian government has engaged in brazen and vulgar anti-Semitism, utter disregard for human rights, continued belligerent warmongering rhetoric by President Ahmadinejad, and according to the State Department of Iran, is the largest sponsor of terrorism with connections to Hamas and Hezbollah. We are responsible for the deaths of many Americans, or Hezbollah is responsible for the deaths of many Americans, even Oregonians, serving overseas. Colleagues, this bill is important to me because I have a son in the military. I have a son who's been to the Middle East 3 times, who's had mortars fired at him. We dealt with the conflict that was a controversial conflict in Iraq. This bill is important because we don't want to be in that situation again. And the sanctions are working. We can come to a peaceful end and get Iran back on the path to prosperity by them ending their nuclear proliferation. This is the way we should handle this conflict. We should continue to support our federal government, our federal delegates, and say no to Iran and their proliferation of nuclear weapons. I urge your support and your I votes today in the support of our young military men and women in their service. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hunt. Hunt is an aye. House Bill 4110, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will please read the next bill.
House Bill 4128, relating to treatment for craniofacial anomalies.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4128. Representative Hoyle.
Colleagues, this bill requires group and individual insurance policies covering hospital or surgical or dental services to cover medically necessary procedures related to craniofacial anomalies identifiable at birth. So this bill would include coverage for cleft lip, cleft palate, craniostenosis, craniofacial micromedia, and the Teacher Collins syndrome. So, Oregon, now, what you need to know about this is a consensus bill. In the last session, we had brought forward a bill saying that children who have cleft lip and palate should also have orthodontia taken care of, because insurance companies currently cover the surgery to fix cleft lip and palate and craniofacial abnormalities, but they don't cover the orthodontia. With the orthodontia, you can have less surgery and better outcomes. It saves money, so it's about $15,000 to $20,000 less per treatment, but more importantly, there's better outcome and less risk for the child. Representatives from the insurance company said, if you can work with us to talk to the dental insurance companies and health insurance companies to come to an agreement, we'd be happy to help you get this bill passed. So I would like to say thank you. Thank you to Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. Thank you to ODS. Thank you to the Dental Association and everyone that came to the table. This was a complete consensus bill supported by all parties. These are the kind of bills that we should be passing. It's important, it saves lives, and just makes a great difference in the lives of children. So just to give you what the scope is, how many people would be affected, there were 68 cases of cleft lip or palate in Oregon in 2007. And untreated cleft lip and palate and lips can lead to ear infections, hearing loss, tooth development problems, speech difficulties, and other psychological problems, because the children get, they feel badly if you can't fix the issues, the medical issues that they have. So it's cost effective, it's a consensus bill, and I hope that I can count on your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, sir.
She does.
Representative, did the committee or someone provide a report to the committee that assesses both the social and financial effects of the coverage as required by ORS 171.875?
First, Representative, I want to thank you for giving me that question in advance. We did discuss those issues in committee, but we did not provide the report because we made amendments right up to the last, we were trying to get amendments to make sure that this covered only exactly what we were talking about. So we will have that report in time for the Senate bill when the bill is presented to the Senate, because that will be the bill in its final form. Again, the bill, we added the dash one and dash twos on the day that we had the work session. So we did not do that, but it will happen, and we'll provide that to everyone that is interested.
Further question?
Question of the carrier.
Carrier yield?
Yes, sir.
She does.
Did the testimony in the committee contain the information required under ORS 171.880?
So, sorry, one moment, please. It addressed some of what is asked for in this particular ORS, but not everything. But again, what the ORS says is that the report should be submitted with the proposed measure when the proposed measure is submitted for filing and shall be in writing and be part of the public record. But current practice, past practice, is that sometimes these reports are available, sometimes they're not. From our perspective, we felt that it was important to have a report on the final bill as it stands. There's no plan to have it amended in the Senate, and that report will be available with all that information.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill is okay. It doesn't cost any money, which we have a tendency to mandate the heck out of everything. When we do a fiscal, we don't ask the question, what does it cost the end consumer? We have 47 mandates now in the state of Oregon. This will be the 48th, although this one doesn't cost anything, which is, that's a good mandate. But we're raising the cost of insurance in this state by this body and the Senate and the governor by up to 40% additional cost to every man, woman, and child in the state of Oregon. Are we going to continue on this basis? Or are we going to administer our own rules? We have ORSs in place that we're ignoring. Example, one of them is this, if you read in the bill on line 22 on the first page, it says this section is exempt from ORS 743A.001, which is a sunset. It allows us the opportunity to look at this 6 years from now and saying, does this work? No, we exempt that, and we continue on. We don't really look at it. So the other question I have is, why aren't we adhering to ORS 171.875 in the House side? We said it would be prepared for the Senate. We said we were in a rush. But folks, if it's in statute, we need to adhere to our own procedures that we have set out in the past. So when we press buttons on these issues, let's make sure that we've done our job and done our homework and quit exempting and doing a double standard that it's okay for someone else. They have to adhere to this, but we as a legislative body don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
First, I'd like to commend the representative from West Salem and Junction City or wherever for having patience with this bill and for staying with it and getting it to the place it is now. This is not so much a mandate as a clarification. And the insurance companies have come to us and said there's some conflicts between dental insurance and medical insurance. And what they do know is that when you have a child with cleft palate, if you do the orthodontia that needs doing, it saves surgeries and a lot of surgical money because it's a much more straightforward surgery to straighten out the problem 4 or 5 years down the stream. This is actually an important bill for a small number of people. It clarifies for the insurance industry who's supposed to pay for it. And it ultimately, the answer is it does have an important impact on the consumer of health insurance. It should ultimately reduce premiums. So I urge you to join me and the sponsor of the bill to move this forward, the carrier of the bill, I think. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as a chief co-sponsor, people might look and see the representative from wherever I am, House District 24, is on a mandate. So this is the kind of legislation that we should be looking at and supporting, because this does clarify things to actually reduce the cost of health insurance. There are worse things that we do to drive up private insurance through cost shifting and things like that by us not paying what we should pay off the Medicare and Medicaid. This is something that we do in our Medicaid program, but private insurance didn't have the clarification to do it. And I want to thank the carrier for bringing this bill forward today and thank her for allowing me to be a chief co-sponsor on this bill. And I urge everybody in this body to give this an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hoyle, would you like to close?
Yes, please.
She does.
I would like to thank the representative from somewhere in Portland for making that excellent clarification. This is a good bill. This saves money. This, again, was a great collaboration, and I want to thank everyone that participated. And there was one story that we heard from a parent with a child who was born with cleft lip and palate. And he said, you know, when you have those Kodak moments, and he said, you know, we don't have a lot, and we, you know, we couldn't buy another car when our car broke down, but we paid for this orthodontia because it was important. And he said, when my child was 15 years old, one of the most beautiful things I've seen was that I saw her take a bite of an apple. She couldn't do that before. She's had these surgeries, and she was able to get this orthodontia. So this really matters. It saves money, and I hope I can count on your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 4128, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4146, relating to expungement and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4146. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. After experiencing sexual abuse as a child, Jessica got recruited into the sex trade as a minor. She was shipped up and down the I-5 corridor into Hawaii and into Canada, overseas, working up to 12-hour days to earn her quota, the $1,000 per day that her pimp required. She escaped that world, sort of. Turns out it was not easy to find a job with a record of prostitution. She could work hard. She started extreme couponing. She started a business. She helped develop a curriculum to help other people save on their groceries. But it was still hard to find another job. In some respects, Jessica is a success story. Most aren't. And most will never hear about. Her Johns and pimps were criminals. Her criminal record failed to acknowledge that she was a victim and prevented her from moving forward and contributing in her life. Human trafficking is a global problem that impacts us here at home. It's hard to think about the sex trade affecting us here in Oregon, but once the surface is scratched, it's harder not to think about it. When I was first approached in 2010 to help with human trafficking legislation, I wasn't alone, I think, in this body in being uninformed. Since then, as a body, we've learned more and made some progress. It is not nearly enough. And with this bill, it will still not be nearly enough. The information we have, that we think we have, bears repeating. The average age of entry in international human slavery-based prostitution is reportedly 12. And while precision is impossible, the international human trafficking industry is estimated to be a $40 billion a year industry. This is a global challenge. But the challenge isn't limited to faraway places. It isn't only in Vietnam or Thailand. And while it's notoriously hard to track, reports show the I-5 corridor is a trafficking pipeline, and that gangs are increasingly involved in forcing young girls into prostitution. With elevated penalties for drug trafficking, child prostitution can offer a more lucrative ratio of risk and reward. Where I live, unemployment and high school dropout rates are way too high. We have communities that are way too isolated. Housing policy keeps mixed use and low-income housing out of certain areas, forces them into others. And the high concentrations of at-risk young people, especially young women, offer easier targets. As a result, traffickers force these vulnerable members of our community into dangerous cycles of criminal activity. This is an area for government. The unfettered market doesn't appreciate the difference between a 16-year-old girl and an Audi. Thanks to yeoman's work put in by a coalition of victims advocates, nonprofits, law enforcement, the Judiciary Committee, the faith-based community, elected leaders, our area is becoming a model for the nation in fighting child trafficking, but it is not nearly enough. House Bill 4146 is another small step that works on the work done by the coalition that worked on the human trafficking hotline bill and other modest steps. In Oregon, we recognize that juveniles can't consent to sexual conduct. And local jurisdictions have almost all stopped charging children with prostitution. But this is a recent change. And there are some young adults whose reentry into society is made more difficult by a prostitution charge while they were a child sex trafficking victim. This bill will allow a judge to expunge a prostitution adjudication once the victim has reached age 18. The expungement will only cover the prostitution adjudication and not other crimes that may have occurred while the victim was being trafficked. We know that victims often face significant challenges recovering from trafficking. I urge you to support House Bill 4146 to help them reenter in society. This is a smaller bill about a bigger thing, an important thing to talk about. Like domestic violence decades ago, and sometimes now, this challenge remains, that much of the challenge that people are unaware and don't talk about it. I appreciate your support for the smaller bill. I also appreciate our raised attention to the bigger thing.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you.
And I thank the good work of the representative from the Bedrock District on this issue. My first session in 2005, my very first day I walked on the floor, I was handed a note to join then Representative Karen Minnis in a bill that would have charged a very large fine on the Johns, those people who buy the services of these young girls. We couldn't even get a hearing on this bill, and we tried time and time again. Then at the time, Secretary of State Kate Brown, when she was in the Senate, helped pass a bill that formed a task force to work on this issue and bring some attention to it, because nobody wanted to talk about it. I have a granddaughter who just turned 11, and I know many of you have children or grandchildren or friends or family in this age group, and this is just unconscionable for me to consider that this is the age at which these children are used in this way. And I, as some of you know me, I travel a lot. I used to not take the train to Berlin because I couldn't stand being in that train station and seeing children younger than 11, boys and girls, throwaway children being used like this around the world. But that's another conversation for another day. This is a great step forward to help these young kids get out of this and help them move on in their lives. There's a lot more work to do, and I think until we really start working on it, if you look into it, and I won't go into the statistics now, but they are stunning. Saskatchewan has one of the highest rates of trafficking. Portland and Seattle, very high rates of trafficking in the U.S. And it's just this hidden culture almost. I know one, I think it was Multnomah County Sheriff's Deputy, who basically gave up his beat to become the champion worker on this issue and help a lot of people move forward. One of the biggest helps was establishing safe houses for these girls. And you can't know how much that helps, but there's way more girls than there are spaces in these homes. And then sometimes when they finish and they get out of these safe homes, they go right back into it because they're compelled. It's the same thing as any kind of trafficking. There's labor. I mean, I could go on and on. But this is particularly onerous, and we need to do something more about it. I hope you'll all support this bill today, and I hope that in the future we will see legislation that will also target those people who utilize these services and get away scot-free, in my opinion. And I will stop there because I don't want to get too excited. But please support this piece of legislation, and let's continue it. Let's have this be a start in the direction we take to save these people, these young people, and give them their lives back. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Comp.
Me?
Oh. Further discussion?
My head is plugged up. But
I'm sorry. The bill?
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker. I'll be very brief to the fact that if you think this only happens to girls, you're misguided. This is sex trafficking, and it doesn't matter what your gender is. Some of the most traumatic situations I dealt with as a school principal dealt with the boys. And so, please, let's support this. Thank you. And I'll listen closer next time.
Thank you, Representative. We won't hold your medical condition against you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to offer some thank yous to Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel, Senator Ron Wyden, the representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland, who has been one of perhaps the most tireless worker on this set of issues in this chamber, the Oregon Center for Christian Values, former Representative Brent Barton, the Youth Rights and Justice Crew, and on the Judiciary Committee, the representative from Albany and the Expungement Work Group, who is working on expungement more broadly, the good co-chairs of the Judiciary Committee, and the representative from Josephine County for his insights that he brought as a public sector attorney. Thank you, and I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4146, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final readings, Representative Widener, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Wanted to request the order to return to the order of courtesies, if I may.
Representative, we'll come back to you when we get to announcements. Okay. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1512 related to lighting that contains burglary. Senate Bill 1518 related to public contracting by state contracting agencies and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 1532 relating to exemption of property and enterprise zones and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1546 relating to treaties. Senate Bill 1548 relating to advertisements for job vacancies and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1555 related to hostile education environments and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read first time or passed to the co-speaker's desk for a referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1535 relating to use of master form instruments and declaring an emergency.
Bill read second time is passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce a friend of mine who is down here from Portland today on the side aisle, Mr. Eric Liebman. I would request that everybody wish him a warm welcome as he tours the Capitol for a little bit here this morning.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome to your guest. Further announcements, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the representative from the Hundred Valleys of the Umpqua and I would like to remind you of an invitation that you received in your email inbox. Coming up next week, February 22nd at 5:30, across the street over at Willamette, will be the 2012 Turkish-American Legislative Dialogue and Friendship Dinner. This is a fantastic event. We urge you to come. For those of you that came last year to the luncheon that we had in the Capitol, you know it was a lot of fun and a great chance to learn about the partnership that we've had with this great organization and with the country of Turkey. So please come, enjoy some great food and a really interesting presentation.
Thank you, Representative. Further announcements, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats, we've looked over what we need to do today, and we will not, I repeat, not have a caucus over the lunch hour. You are free to do as you please. Thank you.
Further announcements? I don't know how you beat that one, but Representative Freeman.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to tag on to my great colleague that's talking about the Turkish dinner. Some of you may have remembered last year we had them here for lunch. Remember how good the food was? I appreciate the fact that you're talking about the great presentation, and it will be a good presentation. But remember how good the food was? So please try to figure out how you can make it over and join us for dinner. It will be a wonderful dinner. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further announcements? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I cannot beat my peer on the other side of the aisle. We will caucus at about 12:20, 10 minutes after we get out of here. Get your lunch, and we will caucus. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further announcements? Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I just wanted to announce that the representative from the heart and soul of Washington County and I are holding a Ladies at the Legislature tomorrow from 11 to 1. If you've got constituents that you'd like to have come join us, I believe that we've got some great speakers lined up, and they'll get a chance to see floor session about 11 o'clock. So, and we'll have the meet in room 350. Is that right? I think it's 350. So if you've got any questions, we're happy to answer them for you. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Further announcements? Colleagues, you will hear this as we proceed to closing today. We had discussed having a floor session later this afternoon. We've now determined that that will not be necessary, so we will not have a floor session this afternoon. Further, we have adjusted the date. We have adjusted the time for Friday's floor session. It is not at 11 as previously announced. We will start at 10:30 tomorrow morning, and we'll go back over that as we go through the close today. Remonstrances. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, our good friend carried a great memorial for a great Oregonian, and he referred to being able to figure things out, find solutions, and get things done. True words for a great Oregonian. We can do all that too, folks. Just yesterday, I was condemned as reckless for supporting a water bill and a timber bill. But oddly enough, some folks have figured it out up there in Portland, and now today they are endorsing the water bill. That is truly good news. Unfortunately, they have some wrong information here. Nothing in the timber bill that we're proposing, and that I hope we pass, Mr. Speaker, will threaten clean water, salmon stronghold, wildlife, old growth forests, or recreation. And we are not converting state lands into industrial forests, because guess what? We already have industrial use on our state forests. We already do. Clearly, they're not aware of that. The proposal is within our Oregon Forestry Practices Act and can be proven sustainable. And as the department pointed out in the hearing the other day, there will not be any environmental or labor standards watered down, deleted, amended, repealed. We need to figure things out, get people to work, and so people can have the dignity of feeding and clothing and housing themselves and their children, and pay taxes so we can continue to do the good work here for the great people of the great state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance? Representative Huffman.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, what I'm about to say will probably explain a lot to most of you. I want to say a big amen to my brother from Happy Valley. He's been standing up daily, remonstrating on the need to pass a couple of bills to create jobs. And for those of you that don't know, my mother back in Missouri is 4 feet 10 inches tall. She's known as the Little Preacher Woman. And this past Sunday, she passed her 43rd anniversary preaching at the same church, Little Assembly of God Church in Eldon, Missouri. And of course, that's in the Bible Belt. And so growing up in an Assembly of God church and a Little Preacher Woman's church, you know, it was very common when you heard the preacher say something you agreed with, you said a big amen. And so that's my big amen going out to my brother from Happy Valley. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today is the 16th day of our legislative session. Oregon's first constitutional even year session. This week we celebrated the 153rd birthday of this great state. Today we just passed several bills on a bipartisan basis, as we did yesterday. I want to draw your attention to Five of those bills that we passed had minimal fiscal impact. We held one bill over that also had minimal fiscal impact. I don't know about you, but when I add up minimal hundreds and hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars, it adds up to a lot when you start putting it together. I believe we came here with three priorities to start this session. One was private sector job creation, education reform and transformation in the education area, and healthcare transformation that is really important to the people of this state of Oregon. The number one priority of our state, though, should be helping private sector job creation, and I believe it is being overlooked to this point in this session. There are still a few job bills alive. House Bill 4098, some harvesting of our natural resources. House Bill 4101, taking some water out of the Columbia River during the most high times of that water to help improve agriculture in the state. But there are special interest groups that continue to push back on the real important things that we came here to do for the citizens of Oregon. Other job bills for income tax relief, capital gains reforms, rehire tax credits are effectively dead as of today. Strict rules of this short session required that those bills passed out of their committee by February 14th, the 153rd birthday of the state of Oregon. As a member who has continued to work with both sides of the aisle and will do so, it is my hope that the friends, our friends on both sides of the aisle, will in turn join in support of the other good job bills that still are laying before us, as over 120,000 unemployed Oregonians are still looking for leadership in Salem.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Hoyle.
I'd like to thank my colleagues about talking about good bipartisan bills. I work very hard to have a reputation as someone that will work with anyone on either side of the aisle if there's a good policy. And last Thursday, February 9th, we received a floor letter urging support for House Bill 4094, the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Bill. That passed out of our committee 8-0 on a bipartisan basis. We had a letter supported by every business organization, because quite frankly, in my district and in Lane County, where 94% of the businesses are 100 people or under, this is important. It is important that small businesses have access to affordable health care. But the exchange bill did not pass on the floor. It was sent back to committee. And it's been a week since that letter was circulated. It's been a week since we had the opportunity to vote on a good bipartisan bill that was thoroughly vetted in committee, that was supported by consumer groups, that was supported by business groups, and we chose not to do that. I think it's a simple request that I make today. Let's stop wasting time. Let's stop playing games with bills that are good for Oregon and good for Oregon's small business. Let's get this bill back to the floor so that we can vote on it and help our small businesses get access to affordable health care.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:30 a.m., Friday, February 17th, 2012.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Friday, February 17th, 2012.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Friday, February 17th, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.